raised her head. Her eyes were fixed on a strip of waning light above the chimneys. From somewhere in the city came sounds like the distant beating of drums, and beyond, far beyond, a vague muttering, now growing, swelling, rumbling in the distance, like the pounding of surf upon the rocks, now like the surf again, receding, growling, menacing. The cold had become intense, a bitter, piercing cold, which strained and snapped at joist and beam, and turned the slush of yesterday to flint. From the street below, every sound broke sharp and metallic. The clatter of sabots, the rattle of shutters, or the rare sound of a human voice. The air was heavy, weighted with the black cold as with a pall. To breathe was painful, to move an effort. In the desolate sky, there was something that wearied. In the brooding clouds, something that saddened. It penetrated the freezing city cut by the freezing river, the splendid city with its towers and domes, its quays and bridges, and its thousand spires. It entered the squares, it seized the avenues and the palaces, stole across the bridges, and crept among the narrow streets of the Latin Quarter, gray under the gray of the December sky. Sadness. Utter sadness. A fine, icy sleet was falling, powdering the pavement with a tiny crystalline dust. It sifted against the window panes and drifted in heaps along the sill. The light at the window had nearly failed, and the girl bent low over her work. Presently she raised her head, brushing the curls from her eyes. "Jack?"
"Dearest?"
"Don't forget to clean your palette." He said all right, and picking up the palette, sat down upon the floor in front of the stove. His head and shoulders were in the shadow, but the firelight fell across his knees and glimmered red on the blade of the palette knife. Full in the firelight beside him stood a color box. On the lid was carved, J. Trent, École des Beaux-Arts, 1870. This inscription was ornamented with an American and a French flag. The sleet blew against the window panes, covering them with stars and diamonds. Then, melting from the warmer air within, ran down and froze again in fern-like traceries. A dog whined, and the patter of small paws sounded on the zinc behind the stove. "Jack, dear, do you think Hercules is hungry?" The patter of paws was redoubled behind the stove. "He's whining," she continued nervously. "And if it isn't because he's hungry, it is because..." Her voice faltered. A loud humming filled the air. The windows vibrated. "Oh, Jack," she cried, "another..." But her voice was drowned in the scream of a shell tearing through the clouds overhead. "That is the nearest yet," she murmured.
"Oh, no," he answered cheerfully. "It probably fell way over by Montmartre."
And as she did not answer, he said again, with exaggerated unconcern,
"They wouldn't take the trouble to fire at the Latin Quarter. Anyway, they haven't a battery that can hurt it."
After a while, she spoke up brightly.
"Jack, dear, when are you going to take me to see Monsieur West's statues?"
"I will bet," he said, throwing down his palette and walking over to the window beside her, "that Colette has been here today."
"Why?"
she asked, opening her eyes very wide. Then,
"Oh, it's too bad. Really, men are tiresome when they think they know everything. And I warn you that if Monsieur West is vain enough to imagine that Colette..."
From the north, another shell came whistling and quavering through the sky, passing above them with long-drawn screech which left the windows singing. "That," he blurted out, "was too near for comfort." They were silent for a while. Then he spoke again gaily. "Go on, Sylvia, and wither poor West." But she only sighed.
"Oh, dear, I can never seem to get used to the shells."
He sat down on the arm of the chair beside her. Her scissors fell jingling to the floor. She tossed the unfinished frock after them, and putting both arms about his neck, drew him down into her lap.
Don't go out to